Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. Greetings, Earthlings. Greetings, Earthlings. This is Mr. Michael Dean. Hold your kitties tight. It's snowing in Wyoming. Randy England, my co-host, is it snowing in Missouri?
Right here in Missouri.
It's what?
Here in the central time zone. It's morning and it's just fine here. I heard about your snow. I'm sorry.
I think it's the last alphabet storm of the year. It's Zephyr. So hopefully that means they're done. They've gone through the whole alphabet. And speaking of alphabet and Greek letters, we are going to talk today about Greeks and their influence on Americans. Greek democracy. People, you know, Plato, Aristotle, all those fun fellows who, you know, liked sleeping with young boys and forming the pattern for democracy of America. That sounds wrong. But Plato was very elitist and silly, and he influenced American democracy. Another thing to point out, too, is that a lot of government buildings are in the Greek style because early American civil planners really liked the Greeks. What do you know about the Greeks, Randy England, about the old-timey democratic democracy Greeks?
Well, they gave us democracy, right?
They didn't give it to us. They had some, and then America had some. America decided to emulate it.
I mean, you don't want to trash them about everything that they did, but you know, first of all,
they're not going to call in, and if they do, I won't take the call.
I know you won't, but you know, they still. I mean, they were all big. They had lots of slaves, so they were not exactly civilized yet, and women, I think, had it pretty rough back then, but they did come up with the idea of democracy, at least the first big instance in a real trial. And if they did anything for us, I think we owe them for teaching us that democracy can be just as totally screwed up or even worse than monarchy.
Did they also influence the legal system? As a former prosecutor, did you have to study them in law school?
No, we really didn't. Mostly we would study the old English law as it came up, and if we studied anything at all, and historical sorts of things.
Yeah.
But the Greeks, and I don't know a whole lot about their legal system, except that they did have a very developed legal system. It had a lot of problems in it, but I guess everybody's have a lot of problems.
They also had some very severe, laws too for mild. The word draconian comes from, the adjective meaning a very severe law for a small crime, derives from Draco, who was an Athenian law scribe under whom small offenses had heavy punishments.
I think that's right. They were also, they had different phases. If I recall, there was a fella, I think his name was Pericles, that when he was in office for quite a few years, I believe, he did develop a system of, it wasn't not so much law, but government. And, more and more people had a vote, but it didn't get into this crazy democracy that they got in by the time of, Socrates.
Well, they also had direct democracy. It was not representational democracy.
Well, that's even worse.
It is. But, and even worse than that, not every inhabitant of Athens could vote. It was a small percentage of the hoity-toity and elite. And Plato said that one of the problems with democracy basically was that stupid people got to vote and would vote based on impassioned speeches rather than understanding the issues, which may have had some influence on why American democracy, because I know the founders studied these guys. Jefferson thought that Plato was kind of a silly man, and especially just didn't like his writing style. But the idea of representational democracy may have been a reaction against having read or having seen how it worked in ancient Greece. Now, Plato's Republic, which, you know, Americans always say, we don't live in a democracy, we live in a republic. And they usually don't know what that means. But what that means is that people don't vote directly because they're too stupid. So the stupid people vote people that are supposed to be smarter than them to do their voting for them with the Electoral College and with representatives. And Plato's Republic was a book he wrote that was the first recorded proposal of utopia. And, you know, some people say, what about the Bible, the Garden of Eden? That was after this. That was about 300 years after this. And, well, actually, the Old Testament. When is the Old Testament from? That is way before Christ, right?
2,000 years. I think the Old Testament was probably written over a long period of time. And I would assume that the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve thing was probably one of the earlier things written.
Yeah, but that was that wasn't a proposal. That was purported history. So the first recorded somebody trying to design a utopia was Plato's Republic. And I'm quoting here a description. Part conversation, part fictional depiction, part policy proposal. It proposes a categorization of citizens. Now, this is where it gets horrible as soon as you describe it. Categorization of citizens into rigid class structure of golden, silver, bronze, and iron socioeconomic classes. So basically, he proposed utopia through a caste system. The golden citizens are trained in rigorous 50-year-long educational programs to be benign oligarchs, the philosopher kings. The wisdom of these rulers will supposedly eliminate poverty and deprivation through fairly distributed resources. All right, there's your socialism. Though the details on how to do this are unclear. The educational program for the rulers is the central notion of the proposal. It has few laws, no lawyers, and rarely sends its citizens to war, but hires mercenaries from among its war-prone neighbors. These mercenaries deliberately being sent into dangerous situations in the hope that the more warlike populations of the surrounding countries will be weeded out, leaving only peaceful peoples. Man.
I assume those war-prone neighbors would have been extremely stupid and not been able to figure out what was happening to them, right?
Yeah, that they're being paid to kill themselves and others off.
Yes. You know, Plato, though, he was probably reacting to Socrates and the death of Socrates, who was executed, basically by the popular assembly or the, you know, this...
Well, it was the
non-representative democracy.
It was the Second Amendment, right? It was basically, you know, if the leaders get out of line, you poison them, right? And then stab them with swords. That's what they did.
Well, it was an execution. I mean, he drank poison. But Socrates, during his life, there was one incident when the popular assembly was just run by the mob and everyone, you know, one man, one vote situation. And there was one time where there were some generals that had fought a battle and won the battle, but apparently they failed to recover bodies of their dead and bring them back, and that was a big no-no. And the mob was just angry as they could be and wanted to vote to kill these generals who hadn't brought back these bodies. And Socrates, he held an office, I forget what they called it, but he held this office for just one day. I don't know if he held it one day at a time, but he held it for one day and pointed out that under the rules that they had, they couldn't do this vote on that particular day. And they were so mad, they just waited until the day was over. He was out of office. I guess somebody new was in the next day, and they immediately voted to execute all these generals. Then they executed them immediately. And then the next day, I think it was the next day, but it was right after that, they then were very sorry for what they'd done and how stupid it was and unfair, and voted honors to these generals the next day, the ones they'd had executed. I mean, it was just absolutely insane. You know, you stop and think about things like in our society, like you hear like some moron says something really stupid, you know, on TV or something like
talk
that.
Radio,
or
talk radio.
Or the or they just catch. I mean, he might be some racist, or they just catch the Boston Marathon bomber. And at the time they catch him, then they'd say, "Now go to your computer and vote, you know, whether we should kill this guy right now." And you know that they would do it. I mean, we're no different than these people.
Well,
I mean,
it's the basis of American democracy. You know, the basic thing they changed was the founding fathers decided that people weren't smart enough to basically, I think what the founding fathers did was they took Greek democracy and aspects of Plato's Republic, which was fantasy, and took the parts of it that they most liked that would give them power and allow them to be the wise, benevolent philosopher, king, benign oligarchs.
I'm sure they had some of that in mind. Not everyone could vote, but still, I mean, when you put these in a hierarchy of what's worse, the direct democracy is probably the worst there is.
Oh, if this was direct democracy, I'd probably be living in a cage running on a treadmill right now. A very small cage.
Well, if you weren't, we could vote on it.
Yeah, and you know, I remember seeing a bumper sticker in San Francisco in about 1995 or 96 that said, "Internet to replace U.S. presidency by 2020. And what I think what they were talking about was direct democracy, because that's something people always want in San Francisco. And I think it was kind of visionary, but I don't think in the way they meant. I don't think direct democracy. I think in the sense of through other technologies, things that the internet can do and will eliminate all of the need for the monopoly of the so-called services that governments do, like land deed registration, proof of ownership, proof of original authorship, money, sending money, creating wealth.
You mean we would do everything through the blockchain? Is that what you're saying?
That is a very utopian idea, but I think that a lot of what governments claim to need a monopoly to do could be done. I mean, I don't know why we have a post office anymore. It's just a jobs program. You know, email eliminated that. That was one of the first things the internet did before the web. We'll be back with more of our strong opinions about democracy and utopian thought on the Freedom Fiends after dark, after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to torrent
Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, with Randy England. Used to be a state prosecutor, and then he became a cool guy and quit doing that. Randy, you had a comment about my beaming you into your cerebellum liner in the break. What'd you have to say about that?
Well, I didn't want to bring this up in public.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead. I can take it.
Well, you said that you were beaming the fiend's message into my cerebellum. And if I remember my biology class, I'm thinking that your mind part is in your cerebrum and not your cerebellum. Is that right?
Oh, you're talking about the part that does the thinking and logic and reason?
Yeah.
That's not the part of the brain I want this show to attack. I mean, affect. No, the cerebellum is like the reptile brain that controls like motor functions and breathing. And no, I'm basically saying I want my words to create an unholy army of the night that when I say my secret word, they will launch with their arms out like zombies and do my bidding.
Well, I feel better not catching you in a mistake. But here, I thought of another thing.
That's the kind of libertarian I am. I'm the one that wants
it. I need to ask you about one more thing that's in the program.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a program, there's an ad that runs, I guess it's on, you know, during the breaks and that, where someone is selling the Total Transformation Program.
Yeah, that's not ad. That's the network's ad. I don't know anything about it.
Well, it's a program to make your kids behave and behave themselves.
Yeah, I can't comment on the ads.
Well, I know you can't. What my comment was on the placement of the
ad.
it was followed by the ad for Compliacin, some pill that that's you're supposed to give your child to make them behave.
Yeah, well, that was.
I was thinking that had to be intentional, but
they come up pretty randomly. They come up pretty randomly, and I had somebody write me today who was listening to the Afternoon Fiend show in Colorado on a radio station, and he wrote me and he said I could understand this request, but it was kind of absurd in a way, because he basically said, I was listening to your show yesterday, not today, so like, you know, something that's already kind of out of my mind of like forgetting what was on it. And he said, there was an ad describing a business opportunity. Can you tell me what that ad was? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Because first of all, like, I guess people don't understand how radio works. Basically, well, there's different kinds of radio placement. There's barter, and then there's pay. And pay is when somebody, like, basically pays a station or a network, you know, usually local stations. Like, sometimes there'll be, like, a Saturday show that's an afternoon show. It's either an advertisement or a talk, you know. Sometimes it's a local millionaire who just wants to vent, you know, and he'll go buy an hour or two of radio time once a week. Then there's barter, which is what we are, which is basically there's no money changes hands, but ad time changes hands. So basically, there's three entities involved. There's the network, which in our case is GCN. There's the show, which in our case is Freedom Fiends. And then there's the affiliate, which is the local stations that play us. Now, here's how this works. The show, that's Randy and I right now, produce content. The content is delivered to the network over the internet, in this case. And the network buys satellite time and sends it up to satellites, and then local radio stations pick that up on a satellite receiver and rebroadcast it on AM or FM radio, usually AM with talk radio, but we are on a few FM stations. So there's something called a program clock or a show clock, which is, it's not an actual clock, it's actually a pie chart for each show, and they're a little different on different shows. I think there's 72 shows on GCN, something like that, and there's about 10 different clocks. They're pretty similar. But basically, it divides the hour up into a pie chart. Each hour is divided the same way. First 6 minutes is news. Then there's the first 5 minutes of news is news, and then there's a 1 minute ad, which is local. Local means it changes with the affiliate. Each affiliate puts in their own ad there. Then there's 13 minutes of talking. Then there's 4 minutes of ads. 2 minutes of them are the shows. 2 minutes of them are the networks. So it gets divided up that way, and everybody's happy, and everybody gets to put their own ads in and can go out and sell their own ads. So now for an example. Yep. If it's my voice or my wife's voice, it's probably our ad. The rest are GCNs or the local stations. Here we go.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Michael Dean After Dark.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah. Yes. Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. And that music is, of course, my old band from the 80s and 90s called Bomb. And it's kind of cool, man. Bomb's finally on the radio. We certainly never were when we were together. So, Randy, we were talking about democracy, its roots, utopia, and then we had a brief foray into the teaching hospital of radio that is this show. You know, somebody said that I know enough about radio and I'm good enough at teaching people at it that I should actually charge hosts to be on here. I wouldn't charge you, though, but it actually crossed my mind to start, like, you know, Michael Dean's $99 radio school or something. And I work with you, get your audio up good, have you on as a third wheel for a while, then move you over to second, and then you graduate and I print something out of my computer. What do you think of that?
Well, it seems fair as long as you're not going to charge me.
No, I'm not going to charge you. You got grandfathered in. Are you a grandfather?
You know, I just became a grandfather about 4 months ago.
Let's talk about that, man. What's that like?
It's like you're old.
Yeah. Ben Stone became a grandfather recently, and he's at least, I think he's 6 years younger than you. You're 60, right? Or 58?
Well, it's worse than that. I'm 62.
Okay, Ben Stone's 54 or 55, and he just became a grandfather.
Yeah, well, I hung out for quite a while, but yeah, I'm there now. But it's great. I mean, you know, obviously this is a brilliant child, handsome, and I haven't seen him for a month or so, so he's probably walking by now. I don't know.
Cool, man. Well, you're pretty young for talk radio, I think. I'm very young for talk radio. I'm going to be 50 this month, and I think I'm the youngest talk radio host in America now that Nima Vedotti quit.
Well, we're younger than Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. Yep. He's a wealthy man, too. I'm not. I don't have a gold-plated microphone yet. I think they, you know, they should just, I think they give that to you when you retire, but he's not retired yet, so he's still using it. But yeah, I would say I wish he would gently retire and make room for the rest of us. But, you know, if he retired, they're not going to put me in his slot. They're going to put someone that sounds like him and talks and thinks like him in his slot. I agree with him about 20% of the time. I like it when he talks about how he pulled himself up by his bootstraps. I like when he's not talking politics. I like when he's talking work ethic and kind of sounds like a Horatio Alger novel. He's good when he does that.
And if he runs down the Republicans or something.
Runs them down? What, with his car?
Well, no.
No, that's Laura Bush. Laura Bush and Ted Kennedy are the ones that committed vehicular homicide and got away with it.
Yeah,
Too soon? People don't know about Laura Bush. Didn't Laura Bush run someone over when she was like 18, like a friend of hers, and kill her with her car?
I don't remember, but you probably do.
Let's ask the internet.
I know that you know, Ted Kennedy had Chappaquiddick and
yep.
Mary Jo Kopechne, and that was didn't keep him from, you know, winning office.
Okay, this is Laura Welch, was Laura Bush's maiden name. On the night of November 6th, 1963, Laura Welch ran a stop sign and struck another car, resulting in the death of its driver. The victim was her close friend and classmate, Michael Dutton Douglas. By some accounts, Douglas had been Welch's boyfriend at one time. Welch and her passenger, both 17, were treated for minor injuries. Let's see. A Bush spokesman said it was a very tragic accident that deeply affected the families and was very painful for all involved, including the community at large. Now, so she basically ran over her ex-boyfriend. Yeah, and that was an accident. Okay, moving on, counselor.
Go right ahead.
I always travel with an attorney. I'm the Gonzo talk radio. They're really mellow late night.
Well,
Gonzo.
She wasn't drunk, was she? Yeah. I mean, I don't think you didn't say that.
Oh, you hope I didn't say that because it's, yeah. Okay.
No, I mean, I hope she wasn't. I mean, that would be, I mean, something like that could happen, you know, I guess to anybody. I mean, I've done dumb things when I was completely sober.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you help a lot of people with who are charged with drunk driving?
I have drunk driving cases most of the time. I have some going, yes.
I'm not laughing at drunk driving or cases. I'm just It seems like a lot of what attorneys advertise for. I've actually seen, there's a guy in town that has a billboard that like has a flat fee for dealing with a drunk driving charge. Is that unusual?
That's what I always do. I'm all flat fees. The reason why...
He's like, I'll get you off of it. I'll get you out. I'll keep you out of jail for this amount. That sounds kind of weird to me.
Well, most people won't promise that. I certainly wouldn't. But the reason
what is it they say? A good attorney knows the law. A great attorney knows the judge.
Yeah, or both.
Okay, go on. Sorry.
Well, the reason that there are so many DWIs that come to private attorneys as opposed to robberies and other crimes is that DWIs happen to regular people. I mean, a guy will have a good job and a family, and he'll have a little too much to drink, and he'll commit a crime. It'll be the only crime he commits, you know, this year or maybe his whole life, and yet he's otherwise this upstanding citizen. And the reason private attorneys get him is because he actually has two dimes to rub together, unlike, you know, the guy who's knocking over the, the convenience store who has nothing.
I guess
he gets the public defender.
I guess that proves that crime doesn't pay. If the real criminals or the garden variety criminals who are doing actual crimes like robbing liquor stores and breaking into houses can't afford an attorney. Crime doesn't pay, kids. Right there. You heard it.
Yes. Some of the drug dealers can't afford it, but only
and politicians.
A small percentage of them. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, too. Like the majority of drug dealers are risking their life and working long hours for not a lot of money. It's not as glamorous of a job as it sounds.
They're not very well off by and large. They're not.
Yeah. The guy that they're getting it from, the guy that he's getting it from is probably well off, you know, five or six chains up.
Yeah. Well, that guy never comes to me for representation.
The guy at the top or the guy at the bottom?
The guy with the money.
Why not?
Because I'm here in Little Jefferson City, and there's 50,000 people, and
that guy doesn't live there. He lives in L.A. or New York or the Bahamas.
He's nowhere around here.
He's got a staff on retainer.
That's right.
Yep. So you want to talk about the three felonies a day concept? Explain that.
Oh, okay. Well, three felonies a day. That is the name of a book. Right?
Yeah, have you read it?
I have not read it, but I know what, you know, the topic, I mean, what the thing is about.
That book has such a good title that explains what the book is so well that I don't know anybody who's read it, and everyone I know quotes it. Like, yeah, the average person commits three felonies a day without even knowing it because of that book title. That's a good book title, but it's almost too good to the point where it probably didn't sell the book because no one needs to read it because the title... You know, you can judge that book by its cover in a good
way. And a lot of people, you know, have their own stories of things that, you know, when I was in law school, when I first started in law school and I was in there the first month, you know, I've been sitting in class and criminal law and tort law and contracts and
hang on a sec. We got someone calling. Let me get this guy out.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I am.
Is Randy still there? Oh, we got to get Randy back. Hang on a sec. We got Liberty calling. Where are you calling from, Liberty?
I am calling from Aurora, Illinois, my friend.
Cool. Are you calling to sign up for my $99 radio school?
You know, I need to because that is actually what I am planning on doing. Between yourself, Ian Freeman, and Cody O'Connor, I've been inspired to create my own content.
Excellent.
And I wanted to call and get your opinion of the C01U USB studio condenser mic that I just bought for $30.
Oh, I thought you were going to call and ask, you know, we have an attorney and no one ever calls in and asks him a legal question, although I'm not offering free legal advice. But Randy, would you discuss law not as someone's lawyer if they called in with a legal question in a general way?
Well, I can talk about it in a general way. Obviously, I couldn't talk about a specific matter with somebody. The confidentiality on the radio is limited.
What's your microphone there, Liberty?
I have a C01U USB studio condenser mic from Samson.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Are you using it right now?
I am using it right now. I bought it for $30. And,
sounds good, and it's a good price.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's I would have recommended a different mic, the one that Randy's using, because it doesn't pick up as much background noise as a condenser mic, but I actually know that mic and it's pretty decent. What were you using before?
Earbuds.
As a mic?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was terrible.
Yeah. Sounds a lot better. So do you have a question for the attorney?
You know, I actually do. All now right. that you mention it. I am planning on never paying my taxes again and never registering my vehicle again. What are some of the legal defenses that I could utilize if I were to get arrested for not having a registered vehicle? Because I only have one license plate.
I know what he's going to tell you, but go ahead, Randy.
You know what I'm going to... Well,
you're going to tell him not to do that as your...
No, I wouldn't tell anybody not to do it if they're wanting to do it as a principled matter or to make a statement of some kind. If you don't get a license plate on the car, they're going to pull you over.
Yeah, that's going to get you in trouble quicker than not paying your taxes.
I've got one now, on the back.
Well, then they won't pull you over as soon.
From the back. So wait, is your state a state that requires one on the front too?
It's Illinois, so, I mean, I wouldn't doubt it, considering that Illinois is, you know, the land of the slaves and home of the nothing, yeah.
Well, when I lived in Illinois, you had to have one on the front and the back, but I don't know now.
So is just having one on the back, like, sort of a half protest? half measure?
No, but the police are more likely to get a longer look at you from the back.
All right, we're going to keep you on for the next segment, Liberty. We'll be back. Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends. After Dark on the Genesis Communications Network.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is some Squisklar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And, I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime. At LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah. It's Michael Dean. Michael Dean. Freedom Fiend on your airwaves, in your ear holes, in your cerebellum, turning you into my unholy libertarian army of the night with no free will. That sounds horrible. So Liberty Phoenix had to go. There were police at the door and he had to go deal with them. And we have another caller calling from the Basque region of somewhere between Spain and Portugal, Spain and France, and he doesn't recognize borders. He's a anarcho-separatist or something, syndicalist. I don't know what he is, but he has questions about radio, and I know a little about radio transmitters. So what do you want to know, Pierre?
I am an anarcho-broadcaster. It's not hard to differentiate. I want to know what I can do for having independent radio and not having to deal with having more than 50 watts of broadcast power, because I do not want my government to molest me. It's not good for my life. It's not good for my love.
Sorry, your choice of words there was very interesting. I know that in Spanish, molest means to bother. It means to sexually bother against your will here. Is that what you meant, or did you just mean to bother?
Well, it's all the same thing.
You speak, show me on the doll where the government touched you, Pierre. Yeah, so I'm not making fun of you. I just think that's a hilarious thing about Spanish. You know, I did this movie called DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. And the DVD of it, I worked with translators to do subtitles. There's texted subtitles you can switch on and off in English, French, Italian, German, and Spanish. It's the only DVD in the world that has all five of those languages, and they're well done. But here's an example of why you should always have someone proofread something, even if someone's a good translator or writer. I had somebody proofread the written Spanish, typed Spanish, before I entered it into the program that puts it in the DVD. And she was like, you know, it's like an hour-long movie. I'm showing it at Porkfest, by the way, and giving me a Q&A. But she said that she said, it's perfect, but there's one mistake. You forgot this diacritical mark over this letter in this word. And this artist is saying, I've been an artist for 35 years, but you have him saying, I've been an artist for 35 anuses. So, and it's, you know, just, it's the same letters, just a different little mark.
It's not the best words for you to use. Anuses is not the best thing for years. Is you could use better word.
Okay, so are you wanting to do licensed radio, or do you believe that you live in a sovereign environment that doesn't require licensure, or is your
what is license? I need not someone's permission to tell my words over the radio. It's okay. Not something okay. I need.
So are you from Russia?
No, I'm from Basque. You're I was raised in Russia.
What? Man, you get the coolest calls after dark. That's why I love this show. So, well, I'm not going to advise you to do anything illegal. I don't know what your country's laws are, so I will only speak from a technological standpoint. 50 watts is a hell of a lot of power, heck of a lot of power for radio, for, you know, a home non-commercial radio station. There are transmitters that people buy. Amazon has some. I would check eBay. There's actually some small transmitters built in China. You order them from China and they take like 6 weeks to get there. And for like, you know, under a couple $100, probably $100 or $110, you can get a 50 watt FM transmitter, not AM. I would recommend FM because AM requires a lot more. You have to have a ground on your antenna. Like you have to like dig a trench and put down pipe. So FM, there's actually a document.
I do enjoy laying pipe. It's not a bad thing.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You're one of these anarchists that actually works for a living. I like that. So, go to LRN.FM, Ian Freeman's site, and there's a link about, starting your own station. And there's a PDF there called How to Start Your Own Liberty Station for $250. I would read that and follow it to the letter. All right. Thanks, man. Thank you for your call.
That's MichaelWDean.com.
Good evening, my fellow worms.
I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
The stato sperimentato.
We have an
abomination.
The United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Esto por su parte considera
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to MichaelWDean.com for more. That's MichaelWDean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is Michael Dean, affecting your dreams, but not quite turning them into nightmares. Do androids dream of electric sheep? We're going to find out in the next hour, Randy England and I. Do androids dream of electric sheep, Randy?
Boy, I sure didn't see that one coming.
You know what that is, right?
It's a joke.
Well, it's a book. It's the name of a book. Do Androids Dream Electric Sheep is Philip K. Dick's novel that the movie Blade Runner was based on.
Oh, okay.
And we're segueing into, we decided we're going to talk about dystopian and utopian and libertarian stories. And by stories, we include anything that tells a story, whether it's a film, a movie, a podcast, maybe not a podcast, something that's got, you know, three acts and tells a story and has characters. And, you know, what is it they say? There's a description of the hero's journey that's really funny and concise on Family Guy. They say, Friends become enemies, enemies become friends, everyone's a little richer for the experience. That in some way pretty much describes almost every story, at least any one that makes any money, I think. So, yeah, what are your favorite? I wanted to mention, too, if we're getting into utopia and dystopian, we mentioned the word utopia at the beginning of the show. The Greek roots of that have two different distinct meanings, and one is the good place, you know, which is like a utopia, like the best place possible, the place you want to attain. And it means the good place, and it also means no place in the sense, and that's the literal, but in the sense of an unobtainable place. So, you know, I joke, I coined this phrase libpair, and people have been using it. There's actually even a website. It's a libertarian social network someone's starting called libpair.com, and I had nothing to do with that other than gave the guy my blessings after he did it. I just, you know, didn't sue him, just said, yeah, man, go ahead. And I like it. I like the term. But I don't really believe libertarianism being universal would be a paradise. I think it would be, maybe it would be a paradise. I think it'd be really messy and loud, but I think I'd rather have that than the threat of government guns to my head all day long. Now, in a lot of, there's a class of fiction called dystopian fiction, which I'm a big, big fan of, especially in movies. And a lot of great ones came out of the 70s, 2001, A Space Odyssey, Rollerball, Death Race, let's see, the Escape from New York, that's a little later maybe the 70s, but you know, Logan's Run, Fahrenheit 451, Soylent Green, the list just goes on and on. It was a great time for dystopian movies, and in a lot of those, the one thing I've noticed is that, like, they usually take place in the not-too-distant future, you know, like maybe 40 to 100 years in the future. And generally, like, governments have been replaced with or merged with, like, one or two giant corporations that run everything. Have you noticed that, Randy?
Sure. Yeah. One you left out, of course, it wasn't 70s, Minority Report.
It's from a book from the 70s.
Much more. Oh, well, there we go. That's the 70s then.
Idiocracy is one of my favorites. That's from 2006. You ever seen Idiocracy?
Yes, I enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed that, man.
Pretty nutty. You know, you've got
possible.
Heinlein, Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Yep. Have you seen a movie called Moon? It's a fairly recent movie from a couple years ago. It's kind of, it's got a lot of aspects of 2001, A Space Odyssey. It's a really good movie, and it's directed by David Bowie's son, which is kind of neat. He's a director. And it stars Sam, what is his name? Sam Rockwell, who's an actor I really like. You should check out Moon. I think you'd dig it. Kevin Spacey does the voice of, like, you know, basically HAL from 2001. There's a robot that controls the space station that ends up turning on. Okay, spoiler alert, ends up turning on the hero at some point. But it's voiced by Kevin Spacey, which is great because Kevin Spacey is so just passive aggressive or calmly aggressive in every role he plays that he's perfect for the evil computer that wants to kill you.
Well, you know, the movies, it seems like I remember books easier than movies, although I like those movies. One book that was written, I think maybe back in the early 50s, during the Cold War, I know, by Henry Hazlitt, Time Will Run Back. Huh. And this was about this complete, just a totally communistic, totalitarian society where everything was controlled by the central government. And things were falling apart and going badly. And one guy kind of got the ear of the top guy or top guys. I don't remember exactly. It's been several years since I read it. But he starts feeding them, you know, good ideas. Basically, though, they're free market ideas, but they buy them one at a time and slowly transform this communist country into a free market country. It's really interesting the way that they do it, and Henry Hazlitt did a good job with it. They ended up, I think they ended up turning the whole earth that way, but that was a very interesting a dystopian, if you consider, you know, what happened after the Bolshevik Revolution as a dystopian society. You're in Wyoming, right? What's the one Boston Tea Party's book?
Mulan Labe. I love that book. That book.
Yes, yes.
Was part of the reason I moved to Wyoming. Not that I thought it was going to happen, but. Yeah, Wyoming basically becomes a libertarian paradise over a period of about 3 or 4 years. And that doesn't take place in the not too distant future. That takes place pretty much in the here and now. Although it's probably the not too distant future, like very not too distant. Like when it was written in 2006, it was probably meant to take place now. Or it's just a concurrent alternate universe, because I know that like Conan O'Brien is a state senator in that book, which is possible. Yeah, that's possible.
And it was kind of, how did you say it, daring, because I think some of the characters in the thing were shooting people, like judges and things.
Yeah.
So it was a little over the top.
Well, an interesting thing about that, I mean, the thing of the shooting judges in that, and we're not saying that's a good thing, but it's a component of that book. It's actually one guy who's doing that, but he's like the most careful killer in the world. Like he's not on a spree. He's basically like killing one bad person who is anti-liberty, like every 4 or 5 years in different modes, in different places. So there's no way to connect it. And he's really, really smart. And he used to be an officer in some branch of the service. And yeah, you know, was a military policeman and know how police operates and know how forensics operate.
Well, when you put it that way, it doesn't sound so bad, right?
Yeah. And to be clear, Conan O'Brien is not a Wyoming state senator in it. He's a New York state senator. He's a bad guy. But an interesting thing about that, and this is something like you can't even talk about, they'll kick your door in, but I'm just going to mention there was a paper written in the 70s on what was called AP, which was Assassination Politics. And that's
Jim Bell's paper.
And he ended up, you know, in being harassed to death, I think, by the IRS.
He was harassed to prison is what he was.
Yeah, same thing. But in his paper, he mentioned, you know, basically it was the idea of someone would create a system where people could basically put money together to assassinate somebody, like have a pool, and the manner of doing it anonymously was doing a death pool, which is basically everybody puts money in and bets that this person will die on a certain day, and only the person that actually is going to kill them could know the actual day they're going to die, and then he gets all the money. And they were discussing how the payout would work, and they were describing something very similar to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And that is something that's really scary about Bitcoin to a lot of powers that be, not just that it could destabilize the grossly inefficient and tyrannical and monopolistic money process that governments have in America, but the remote chance that, like, I'm pretty sure anybody who's studying it at a federal level and knows their stuff has probably seen some sort of internal dog and pony show, slideshow, PowerPoint presentation that probably has one slide about the assassination politics white paper. And
well, you know, the problem with Bell's paper and his system was that at the time they didn't have the crypto down and the anonymity down, and it always seemed to me that as soon as they got the thing going, I mean, the government would just come after the people that were running it. But now, I think with not just Bitcoin, but all the related anonymous payment, and not only payment, but now they're talking about prediction markets, and that's exactly what this is about, where you have a decentralized databases that everybody has, and there's nobody in charge. I mean, an anonymous person could release this into the public domain, and the blockchain would be out there, and they would run the whole thing there, and there would be nobody to come after. Nobody to come after. Now, that would be the scary nightmare scenario.
It's not quite there yet, and I want to give a disclaimer of I'm not voting with my wallet or my mouth for assassination politics. I'm talking about it.
No, of course not.
I'm mentioning it as a, you know, something in some fiction, and also something that someone proposed in a theoretical way in the 70s. And it is well known, I am sure, to government people that this idea is out there. And I'm sure as soon as Bitcoin came up, that was the first thing people thought in government when they looked at it was, wait, what's that paper from the 70s? Find that. Yeah, and Bitcoin is not as anonymous as a lot of people think it is. And
it will be.
Yeah, it will be. There's stuff coming out now. Cody Wilson is working on something. Dark Wallet. I haven't tried it, so I don't know if it works. But people, it sounds like it might work, and it's basically a method of mixing. It's kind of like a wallet-type program that mixes your payments with other people's payments and then anonymizes and creates a new address for each payment. And, you know, I don't know if it completely anonymizes it, but it sure makes it harder to just track it. The way it works now, you know, it'd be pretty easy to find out how much Bitcoin I spend and receive if I'm only using, you know, if a person is only using one address that they have on their website, like donate here to the blah, blah, blah. And even if they're using two or three, it's not that hard to follow the money trail, because in a way it's less anonymous than using cash. It can be more anonymous eventually, I believe completely anonymous, but a lot of scanners too, scan the serial numbers on Federal Reserve notes and put them in a database when you make a sale, so they do know who's putting money from who to where.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone proof.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations, and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Assassination politics? No way, man. This is the politics of love. Late night radio with Michael Dean. Politics of love. Randy England, you were talking about the politics of love during the break. What'd you say we need to do? Take away what from the what? About the what?
Well, we were talking about the things that Bitcoin would do and the anonymity and that. And aside from things that someone could do, bad things. You know, they talk about, well, if we can't read your email, how are we going to know if you're a terrorist? How can we keep you safe? Well, I think those are things that we just have to risk, and that the best thing that can possibly be done is to set things up so that the government can't get their nose into any of your business at all. I mean, in the end, I don't want them to know anything. That's one of the reasons why I wish, you know, people would use encryption, encrypt their emails. I wish everyone would encrypt all their emails, and everyone would use anonymous currency, and that would make it completely impossible for anybody to get into anything if everybody did it. I mean, I've tried so many times to do encryption with emails. I mean, I can't even get clients to do it.
Which is crazy, because if anybody has a reason to protect their communication who's not being a bad person, it's a lawyer and his client.
Yeah, and nobody wants to. It's too much trouble. I don't understand it. So nobody. But here's the thing, though. When it gets easy enough, it'll happen.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah, I don't use encrypted email. I use encrypted off the record messenger, which I like even better than encrypted email for a couple reasons. One is because I don't really want a public encrypted email address out there, because I don't want strangers sending me encrypted emails, because I don't want to have any useful information if I am beat with a rubber hose. I basically want, you know, I want it known that I don't know about any illegal activities. I don't want to know about them. And this isn't really like a whistleblower show. You know, this isn't the show to call if, you know, your local sheriff is trying to rape you or something, or trying to kill you or set you up. This show doesn't have that kind of vibe. It's not the best place to do it. There are other shows that are better to do that on. So I don't really want to get encrypted emails from strangers. But I do have about a dozen people that are friends that I talk with. Mostly stuff that I wouldn't care if anyone heard, but I just like doing it encrypted because I can. And I also like that there's no record of it, because encryption someday may be able to get broken. You know, that's allegedly why the NSA is taking all of your tax money and building this giant secret computer facility in Utah, is probably to be able to not only store all communications, well, to store them until they can crack them. And with Instant Messenger, there's nothing left on your computer after you close the program. It's only saved in your memory.
But when it comes to
cracking, and I mean the memory in your brain, not on your computer.
But wouldn't it that day that they could crack the emails come a lot sooner if I was the only one doing it, as opposed to 4 billion people doing it?
I understand the needle in the haystack idea. I wish everyone used if a majority of people, or even a lot of people, used encrypted email, I'd probably do it. But as it stands now, it is extra work. I usually do it on a Linux computer, so when I get an email, I have to start up another computer to do it. I don't want to do it on a Windows computer. And
you're putting the crosshairs on yourself.
Yeah. I mean, how many people and they can tell from internet traffic who's using encryption, but I'm using it anyway. So it's like the crosshairs are already on me, but I just don't want strangers sending me their secrets. That's what it comes down to, really, is like, I don't even want my friends telling me their secrets, let alone
strangers.
No, but
if everyone was doing it and every email was encrypted, the only difference would be the only person who could read it would be the person that received it. And it would be just the same as email is today. I mean, people can send you their secrets in the clear. Well, this would just be, the standard would be, it's secret. It's kind of like sending an envelope instead of a postcard.
Yeah. And, you know, that was a big push that Boston Tea Party has also always had. I mean, he's kind of a rural guy, a cowboy. He's really smart. He's an outdoorsman. He's a hunter. He's a gun guy. But he was into encryption before most people I knew were using it. Even when I lived in San Francisco, he was using it before that. And I was actually taught to use PGP mail by Mama Liberty, who, you know, at the time was a 64-year-old grandmother who learned it from Boston Tea Party. So a grandma can do it, but she has to want to do it. And, you know, they say, well, you know, as soon as encrypted email is easy enough for a grandma to use it, everyone will use it. Well, I know a grandma who uses it, and she taught me to use it. So it can be done. But an interesting thing about Boston is suffers from the same thing I do, that he thinks the government's going to kill him tomorrow. So he tries to put everything in one book. Like, I love Moulin Labbé as a book, but there's footnotes that are 5 pages long on how to do encrypted email. You know, I don't think he thought he'd live to write that book.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
This is Michael Dean on the Freedom Fiends After Dark show, worming our way into your brain and laying eggs of liberty. All right, so yeah, I went to the break saying that I think Boston suffers from the same thing I do, or used to, of thinking the government's going to kill me before I finish this book, or I'm going to get hit by a bus before I finish this book. I need to put everything I know in this one book. And I think he's finally worked that out, because last few books, you know, like he tried to put enough footnotes in Moulin Labbé, a novel, so if it was the last thing he got to write, you'd still know how to do encrypted email from it. But then later he wrote a book, One Nation Under Surveillance, that expanded on that. You know, now he's writing some really cool books, a series of books, Modules for Manhood, you know, basically advice for young men and women, but primarily men, that basically puts like everything he knows about life in one book. It's pretty cool. And I lived long enough to do that. Like I used to write, you know, books on filmmaking where I'd try to tell you everything I knew about how to get along with other people and live a decent life. And I don't mean decent like godly. I mean like, you know, live well and use your skills. And then I finally got around to just writing a book called A User's Manual for the Human Experience. And now that had everything I knew up to that point in it. And now I kind of feel like I don't even want to write any more books. I just talk them on the radio every day. And I put them up on the internet, and I put them up on a torrent feed. And you could go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link, and you can learn how to do that to help keep me drone-proof and live forever through my words. And a couple announcements. One is this show was Michael Dean After Dark. It's now the Freedom Fiends. It still says Michael Dean After Dark, but, you know, that's just waiting to change the satellite feed and stuff and all the automation. So that'll happen. It's out of my hands. And this show is now the Freedom Fiends, and it's now on the Freedom Fiends site and RSS feed. So to make up for that, I jumped in numbering from like 350-something to 380-something, so because I'm counting the Michael Dean After Dark episodes as Freedom Fiends episodes, because that's what this show is now. So when we hit 500, which will be at the end of this year, 500 episodes, we're going to start a new RSS feed for the torrents and put the old one in all of the outgoing archives after that. And we're now going to do one archive a week that has all 6 shows instead of doing individual shows or 4 in one and 2 in the other. So that'll simplify things. Randy, what do you think about dystopian fiction and stories?
All right. Well, you know, dystopian, I can tell you what my very favorite libertarian story is. And it's not a novel, and it's not a movie. But there was a short story, I think it was actually part of a novel, but it's a standalone story by a fellow named Eric Frank Russell called And Then There Were None. And this thing is old enough, you can find it on the internet if you just Google And Then There Were None, Frank Russell. You'll bring it up and you can read the whole thing for free on the internet. I think it was from 1951, but it was about a ship that went out from Earth, and of course that was a very dystopian place at this time, And they were going to all of the places that mankind had colonized through the years, and going back to sort of reclaim these colonies, which they had not been in touch with for a long time. And their aim was to bring each colony back under the authority of the Earth government. And the novel itself talked about a whole bunch of different crazy places where they had all kinds of things. There was a Nazi society, I think, and there was a nudist society, and there was this and that. And the one that they came to the last was a completely anarchist, libertarian society.
Libpair.
Where, totally. And this big ship lands there, and it's filled with soldiers and bureaucrats, and they're going to take over the place, and they immediately go out and demand of them to find the first inhabitants and bring them to talk to their fat ambassador that's there.
Take me to your leader.
That almost sounds nasty.
Or take me to your non-leader so I can make him a leader. Yeah.
And everybody they talk to refuses. Like, we're not going to do what you say. You know, you don't order us around. And they have, it's all about the trouble that they have getting people to cooperate in any way. They just won't cooperate with any of their coercions. They're not impressed by an ambassador or by a general or a soldier or anything like that. And so they finally send the soldiers into town saying, well, nobody will tell us, nobody will come. Let's just go to them, be kind of low-key. We'll find out who their leader is, and then we'll get going on this. And none of the soldiers from the ship can find out anything. But what happens is that most of the soldiers start liking what they see in this completely libertarian society and start deserting. And it comes down to the very end of the story, and nobody wants to have anything to do with the bureaucrats, and it's just beautiful in it. I mean, there's lots of things that are kind of funny, like their system of money. It's more of a barter system than that. And it turns out these people were followers of Gandhi, so they were pacifist in one sense. They just would not be commanded, and you could kill them, and they still wouldn't do what you told them to do. And once someone, their idea is that once someone is willing to die and still defy you, there's no power you have left over them. And these people from Earth, they can't get anywhere with them. And the only thing they could do would be to slaughter them, and they don't do that. So, but it was really a fantastic short story. I just
What's
loved it.
Called?
And then there were none.
I want to read it. I also want to move to that planet. It sounds great.
If you Google it, and it's Frank Russell is the guy that wrote it. There, I know there's one or more free versions right on the internet. You can just read it. It's a great story. Another one I like, F. Paul Wilson, who I think has spoken up at Porkfest, and his Repairman Jack novels. They're not about a libertarian society, but old Repairman Jack is a total libertarian. He's a guy who lives completely off the grid. His job is to fix people's problems. And when he's a repairman, but by that he fixes serious problems. And everything Jack does is off the grid. Nobody knows who he is. He's never paid a tax in his life. He never will. And he's a man that doesn't exist. You call a phone number or get him through a web page, and that's the only way to contact him. And he fixes things. The whole series of books, they're kind of fun. Usually they have a little bit of a supernatural horror bent to them, but it's kind of neat the fact that Jack's personality is this off-the-record guy, and everything he does is tied into his complete anarchist lifestyle.
You know, that was a thing that hippies often talked about as a goal, was living off the grid, you know, in the 60s, and like not being treated like a number. And a lot of hippies were resistant to the idea of computers and advanced technology because they saw that it was going to be used, you know. I mean, for one thing, one of the first things that computers were used for publicly and punch cards was for the draft in Vietnam. But so it was pretty obvious. And back then, citizens couldn't own computers because they couldn't afford them. And, you know, I remember hearing slogans when I was a little kid, like, you know, I don't want to just be a number in your government database. And the funny thing is, like, that was a leftist sentiment then. And now it's kind of a libertarian sentiment, and a lot of leftists want to be, you know, they believe that everyone should be cataloged and accountable for and taxed and quote unquote pay their fair share. And, you know, I hear leftists defending Obama and the NSA and saying, hey, if you got nothing to hide, you shouldn't mind if they're spying on you. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And it's so counterintuitive to what liberals believed in the 60s. What happened, man? What happened, liberals? You used to be cool. They're not anymore.
Oh, why does the government keep things hidden if it has nothing to hide?
There you go. There you go. Yeah. And you know, maybe liberal voters were cooler in the 60s, but liberal politicians never were. I mean, LBJ, and the hippies were yelling at him, hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? And, you know, now they don't want you to have free speech. If you went and yelled at an Obama event, they'd either, you know, gas you in your face with pepper spray, or they'd, you know, take you to the free speech zone behind a fence and a mile away so he'd never hear you.
You can say anything you want there, I think.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they encourage it. It's the free speech zone. It's like basically like, we, you know, presidents have become kings to where they can't deal with the boy who says the king is naked, you know, the emperor's new clothes. They don't want these fragile emperors to be told what the people they're tyrannizing believe and think about them. Yeah, so Demolition Man, that's the I told you I was in that movie. I'm sort of in that movie. Basically,
what did you do?
I am prominently shown twice in that movie as a poster on Sandra Bullock's character's wall. You know how she's her character in that is, you know, that takes place like, I don't know, 75 or 80 years in the future. And she is fascinated with the vulgar 20th century, as her coworkers call it. And she spends all of her credits. You know, there's no money. It's all government money. It's all credits that go straight in your bank account and you buy things with your credits. She spends all her spare credits on antiques, which is like, you know, rock and roll posters from now. And it's a Warner Brothers movie. I was in a band on Warner Brothers called Bomb, and they wanted a couple things on her office wall that looked kind of dark and cool and scary and old-timey for the future. And one is she has a poster of the band Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magic record, and she has a poster of the movie, Mel Gibson movie, Lethal Weapon 2, and she has a poster of my band Bomb, and the picture is like the four band members' faces kind of melting like Funhouse Mirror style, and it looks really spooky, and we're not smiling. And it's on her wall twice, and it's shown for, you know, 7 or 8 seconds square in the middle of the frame. It's just kind of neat and weird. It's not like, oh, it's not a brush with fame or anything, but it's, and I did not get paid for it, but it's kind of cool. Oh, it's kind of cool.
It's a brush. It's a brush.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I nobody knows it's me. No, nobody who, you know, only the, you know, 10,000 people who bought that record probably knew what that was if they saw that movie. So, but I really like that movie because it's an anti-utopia that's real funny, that to me kind of looks like if San Francisco was extrapolated in the future. Like, you know, what's illegal in that movie? Guns, to the point where cops don't even have guns. Salt, sexual procreation, you know, like swearing. Yeah, it's like a nanny paradise. All right, we'll be back.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
This is Michael Dean. I'm just sitting here eating some Soylent Green, enjoying the weather in Wyoming, the snow on May 11th, 2014. And for the last little bit here, Randy is going to tell us about three felonies a day. Take it, counselor.
Three felonies a day. You know, when I was in law school, I was just amazed at how complicated the law was. But then I was kind of really happy thinking, you know, I've been running, doing all these things wrong, and now I'm going to know everything, and I'll finally be safe because I know the law, and I could avoid all these pitfalls. And that was the dumbest thing I could ever have thought, because the more you know about the law, the more danger you realize you're in.
Yeah, I mean, so think about how overly complicated the law is if a lawyer can't even avoid breaking the law and be a good person.
No, you can't. One time when I was a prosecutor, okay, I have some people that threw a bunch of dead animals in some ditch, a load of carcasses, and they sent it in, and I'm looking up and trying to figure out what law they violated to charge them. And as I'm reading this, I realize that not that long before, I had violated the same law because I buried my poor dead cat in my backyard. And I found out that you couldn't bury any dead animal. I mean, not a hamster or even a goldfish, but certainly not a dead cat, unless at least 50 feet from the property line and 300 feet from any neighbor's house. Now, how would you do that in a city?
Wow.
I mean, that's 100 yards. There's no way you can bury a cat in your backyard, and I did it. I'm sitting there biting my nails, waiting for the statute of limitations to run out.
I buried my neighbor's dead cat for her that got hit by a car. It was the brother of the cat I have now. Charlie had a brother named Cash. He got hit by a car. I held him dead and bloodied in my hand and brought him in the house and wrapped him up in a old sweater, and she was freaking out, and I said, all I could think of was, let's give him a fitting burial. And we buried him in the backyard of a house we were renting. And then she moved off somewhere to a place where she couldn't have cats. And I took Charlie because Charlie liked me. And I've had Charlie a long time. Charlie's 16 and quite happy now. But now, what would you say, counselor? Should I give the address in L.A. where I buried the... No, you know what? I want to defy stupid laws, but I'm not going to do that because I don't want anyone to dig up this poor dead cat. I just want him to rest in peace. Not that the cat cares, but, you know... just let it be there. No one's going to know.
The statute of limitations has probably run out. We have an even dumber one than this. I found another one. It was the same thing. I was doing some research when I was a prosecutor. You learn a lot of stuff doing that, even though it's not exactly noble a lot of the time. Well, you know, I mean, when you're prosecuting a murderer, you know, you feel like a good guy no matter what. Yeah. But when you're prosecuting some guy that had some drugs, you know.
Or burying a bunch of dead cats.
Begin to feel like a jerk.
Or buried his dead cat, yeah.
Well, I found out that there is you can get a $100 fine just for allowing a plant called a musk thistle to go to seed on your property. And like, I've got, like, half of my property, I've got some woods at the back of it. Now, I'm sure I've got some of these musk thistles back there, but I haven't seen them. But I don't go down there much, and they're there, and yet... I'm committing a crime if they're down there. I don't even want to go look, you know, because they're bound to be there. You know, if the legislature, they think, somebody says, we got a problem with this musk thistle. And somebody said, well, let's just make it a crime to have
let's outlaw nature. Yeah, that's what governments do, is they denature nature.
Why don't they outlaw, you know, polio or cancer or something if it's that easy? You know, I mean, a weed.
Don't give them ideas.
It's nuts. And it, you know, it just goes on and on. I don't know what it's like in your state, but in most states, but in our state, they send out random notices from the Driver's License Bureau telling people to prove they have insurance. And you have to prove you have insurance or they take your license away. Well, a certain percentage of these things that they send out go to people who have moved. And they get their license suspended, and the next thing you know, they're being arrested for driving while revoked.
Well, it's been a good show, Randy. And what I will say, the redemption in the third act is that while it is unfortunate that people get in trouble for things like that, the more government passes stupid laws, the more people are going to not like the government and ignore it, and it will cease to be, because it only exists because people support it. In their mind, even, they say, yeah, government's good. Yeah, they like the president. That's ridiculous.
This has been Michael Dean. Stupid, Michael. Stupid.
Amen.
I hope we helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.